how do you extend the empire? You extend the empire by controlling the flow of money, yes. by controlling the flow of capital.
Yes.
You control the legitimate rails that money flows over. Now look at all the things that they're against. And they all are things that are direct antipodes, direct competitors to their control over the flow of capital. You virtualize the empire. Now, what's the CBDC? So you virtualized the hard money standard.
I was going to go there.
To a paper money standard, the dollar.
Yeah, I was going
to
go there. Go ahead.
What's next? CBDCs. CBDCs, the further virtualization. Why are they so interested in AI? To build a panopticon, to be able to control, to be able to see where all your money goes so that they can control your access to that money and your access to the society. This, you know, the age-old blackmail of we own your freaking treasuries and we'll just dump them. I'm like, that's nice. If you do that, then you don't have any banking collateral because it's not like anybody's willing to repo a freaking German Bund for anything more than 70 cents on the dollar. Oh, by the way. If it's, you know, and it's, it, you know, you can't go to JP Morgan to get that. You haven't been able to go to JP Morgan and get par value for a German Bund for 7 years. It's just part of the reason why we had the repo crisis of 2019 and 2020, right?
Tom Luongo, Gold Goats and Guns. Good afternoon to my friend. What's going on?
How are you, Andy? It was good talking to you the other day, and it's good to be back on the show.
Yeah, it was. Talking to you offline. Looking forward to seeing you soon in Atlanta here. That's going to be fun. That's going to be a good time in meeting you.
I think so. I think that's going to be a great time. Like we get to do a thing with Andy Shechtman. That's going to be hilarious. I don't know. I'm looking forward to it. I'm only a couple hours away from Atlanta. So I like the idea that it's a conference I can actually drive to as opposed to drop trow at the freaking airport. I know it's bad. They don't make us take our shoes off anymore. So one less, indignity that we have to go through.
I could go on about that. I just got off a plane a week and a half ago and I was like, we don't have to take off our shoes? What?
The day that I can actually bring a good cigar torch through security is the day that I know that we've made it. At the end of the day, I'm in favor of Second Amendment air. So let's not get me started about how far away I am from where we are and what DHS is, you know.
Right. I can go on about
I love the idea of Second Amendment air, dude. I'd be a founding investor in that fucking thing.
Me too.
We all get to keep our guns on the plane. Well, everybody's gonna be really goddamn quiet.
Exactly. It'll be very safe.
No fat asshole is ever going to steal my half of the armrest ever again.
Yeah. Okay. About that. So my wife upgraded us. We just flew to Europe and we flew back. And my wife, we didn't go first class, but we got upgraded to whatever class that was. Tom, it was so nice because I was like, we got room.
I know. It's funny, they've made coach or whatever.
They've gone
out of their way to make it uncomfortable so that you upgrade. And then when you realize that the upgrade is like, oh, I get priority seating.
Yeah.
And I mean, the last time I flew Delta was like, are you kidding? You want an extra $120 for this ticket for what? That I get the board first and I get to make sure that I get to put my carry on in the overhead bin as opposed to being thrown in the back. Yeah. Maybe I have to check that bag or maybe I have to hold it in my fucking lap. You know, how about no Delta and I'll fucking drive next time. I'm literally at that point where if the trip is anything less than 1,000 miles, I'm like, I'm getting my car.
That's exactly my barrier. If it takes me 8 hours, I'm driving. And then, but then I never thought I'm not upgrading. I'm just not going to upgrade. My wife, God bless her, just said, we're upgrading. And she didn't even tell me. And just getting on first, I was like, this is a game changer.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm willing to pay $25 for that, but I'm willing to pay $100.50. How about you How about you stop treating us like cattle?
Exactly.
Exactly. But this is an industry that was designed to be destroyed. This is if we actually want to talk about, you know, stuff that we're supposed to be talking about, which is markets and, you know, money and all that stuff. By the way, it's all part of the war on transportation. It's all part of the I don't want Davos doesn't want us moving around because they want to control us. And then if we do move and if we do move anywhere, or we do move around the country, they don't want us to do so in comfort and or style there because God forbid, you know, we actually like smile. Yeah. And have a good time and not be annoyed by everything. It's like I'm driving, like now that I split time between Florida and Tennessee, right? I gotta drive through the horror show that is Georgia.
And my state.
Anyone who's ever driven in Georgia knows that, you know, you just have to like live with the fact that the cops are, you know, around every corner trying to figure out a way to steal $200-$300 from you until you get to Atlanta. Now I'm old enough to remember when Atlanta used to be Death Race 2000. It was six lanes in either direction, 75 miles an hour, bumper to bumper. And everybody was like, and you know, if you didn't have the fucking stones to hack driving through Atlanta, you didn't drive through Atlanta. Right. And my wife hated driving through Atlanta because of the stress. All my friends in college couldn't stand it. I'm like, stop. We get, what are we going to do when we get to Atlanta? I'm like, we're going to get off the side of the road. We're going to get a Coke and I'm going to drive and I'm going to have a good time because I got to learn how to drive in fucking New York. Right. And where, you know, that's just the way things are. Like, I'm like, ooh, I actually get to drive as opposed to just point the car in a fucking direction. So I just drive through Atlanta like it was not like it was nobody's business. Now, when you drive through Atlanta, because they took away three lanes in either direction and put the express lanes in there, which nobody uses. Notice how now it's just a fucking parking lot.
It is. Do not drive through Atlanta of like 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. Don't do it.
It's awful. And it's only because they took all the free lanes away. I would rather go through bumper to bumper 75 miles an hour. Like, you know, like we used to do on the Garden State Parkway. And God forbid you ever drive in friggin' Miami, right? Yeah. Miami is like, dude, if you don't have a turbocharged engine or a V8, you have no acceleration capability. You will not survive.
It's a death wish. Yeah.
It's so much fun. Yeah. I mean, it's so much fun. And I'm not anywhere near as good as I used to be at this because I've been living in North Florida where it's not like that bad for most of my adult life. But every once in a while I get out there and I start doing it. And I'm like, oh yeah. So I go down like to visit Dexter down in South Florida, and you know he gets really short with me real quick because he knows how to drive down there because he drives in it every day. And I'm like, dude, give me 5 minutes to get acclimated to this shit again, and I'll remember how. I'll like all of a sudden I'll start calling it macadam as opposed to asphalt, and I know how to freaking drive. But it takes me a little while to summon the old New Yorker and then get the thing going. Like I just like, you know, it's got to install the different software and be done with it, but it takes a little while for it to upload. Get over yourself.
Let's start with this Davos, Trump, Davos. The whole, really his whole I don't want to say administration, but his people, they're in Davos. This was 2.5-3 weeks ago. Bunch of stuff was happening. Let's start with that. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, like, you know, I've covered it in a half a dozen other podcasts and whatnot. I haven't had a chance to talk about it, but it's pretty obvious that he walked in with 300 people. Like Patton's Third Army was finally allowed to go, you know, knock across freaking and take Berlin, Prague, and Vienna, as opposed to what happened in 1945 when the communist FDR said, no, that all goes to Stalin, like, asshole. But they walked in and just said, well, globalism's failed, right?
Yep.
You know, flat out. Jameson Greer came in and resurrected the ghost of Alexander Hamilton, which was great. Trump and Bessent, this is the fun part. And this is one of the things that's been interesting about the last couple of weeks when Trump and Bessent both were asked the exact same thing, because the minute they went to Davos and they started poking the snake about Greenland, which then of course elicited this ridiculous over the top reaction from these histrionic freaking estrogenic, as my friend Ian Burlingame would put it, Europeans. And which was great, because then we found out exactly what they're willing to go to war over. Oh, it's Greenland. Okay.
right.
Good to know. And then all that prompted like they're talking, all the talking points that started coming out of London and Brussels and Frankfurt and Financial Times and the rest of it. Don't forget, Trump, we have we have weapons and we can, you know, we can point them at you and we can make you do what we want you to do. This, you know, the age old blackmail of we own your freaking treasuries and we'll just dump them. I'm right. Like, that's nice. If you do that, then you don't have any banking collateral, because it's not like anybody's willing to repo a freaking German Bund for anything less than anything more than 70 cents on the dollar. Oh, by the way. And if it's, you know, and it's, it, you know, you can't go to JP Morgan and get that. You haven't been able to go to JP Morgan and get par value for a German Bund for 7 years. It's just part of the reason why we had the repo crisis of 2019 and 2020. Right. So when, you know, but when Bessent was asked about it first, he said it, and then Trump reiterated it later. Do they have any, the Europeans have any tools that they can use to harm the United States? And Bessent was like, he just treated them the same way he's been treating Elizabeth Warren all morning in the Senate. Like, no.
Yeah. They sent 30 troops over.
Like, are you kidding? Like, yeah, he was right. Just like, oh my. I mean, and he meant it. And he wasn't unserious about it. And the reason he said that, and I've been thinking about this a lot recently. I've been thinking about So we were talking about it the other day. I was doing yesterday, my market report for my patrons. And I started thinking about all the things that have happened. So, like, let's fast forward it past Davos. And let's talk about the last weekend with the Epstein file. With that whole Molt book thing, right? Where the AI bots are all talking to each other. The AI agents are all talking to each other, which is hilarious because about 2/3 of it is fake. Right. It's not even real.
Right. It's a bot.
So what they were trying to do, like, think about what they were doing. If you realize that what happened with the Epstein file dump. Now, there are a number of ways to read the Epstein file dump, but I'm going to give you my particular version of it. It's not necessarily true, but it's at least one way to think about it.
Please.
Which is that the way I've been reading Trump's opposition to the Epstein file thing for months now has been, there's a whole bunch of stuff in there that these people don't want out there. Like, clearly, you dive through all of this Epstein stuff, and all of a sudden, like, the whole oligarchy of the world just looks like as bad, if not worse, than you ever thought they were. Then our fevered imaginations about who they were and what they were, it's even worse than that. And it's all, and Jeffrey Epstein wasn't the anything more than the nexus point linking all these things, and the original, because he was the original dude that was hired by Donald Barr to set up all of these offshore funding networks in order to facilitate all this stuff.
Go there.
All the pervy stuff, all the, you know, all that other stuff, the hand jobs and the massages and, you know, the underage girls and the parties, all of that is what Ian Burlingame always like to call cover for status, meaning it's the direction, it's the misdirection that everybody gets focused on when the whole thing gets blown up. And then eventually you can then use Epstein as an asset to then tie him to everybody, because you get him to have parties with everyone. Now all of a sudden everybody's been affiliated with Jeffrey Epstein, and therefore you can paint with broad strokes in media, which is what they've been doing, yada yada yada. And that's what they tried to do with Trump, even though we know that if they had anything real on Trump in the Epstein files, they, you know, he would have never run for office in 2020 or 2024.
Right.
So none of it was ever going to stick. So in my mind, what Trump was doing was he was using Epstein as the perfect bit of leverage. And he kept saying to everybody, look.
So, okay, let me interrupt you. You said that to me a year ago, or about a year ago.
Yeah,
you just said politics of leverage. This was last year. Yes. This is not coming out right away. I don't think this is coming out right away just because they have leverage. Go ahead.
Right. Well, just think. Remember, I like to use the metaphor of the MEQ, the Manila envelope quotient. Well, everybody's the Manila envelope quotient after this first half of this data dump is starting to peak towards infinity, to infinity and beyond. Right. So I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, if I had Epstein files, I had all this stuff, I would use it as leverage against these people, right?
Right.
I would turn around and I would use it strategically to try and cut trade deals and say, look,
that's exactly what happened. I can hold
all this stuff back for as long as possible, but here are the terms of the surrender. You're going to stay out of fucking politics. You're going to keep the money that you stole. You're going to give them the Putin deal to all these oligarchs. So all this old high table money, right? So you give them the Putin deal. What's the Putin deal? Well, when Putin first came to power, he got control of things. He got operational control of his government.
Right.
He just brought all the big Russian oligarchs into the room and said, look, I know you've stolen all this money. I can't claw it back. I'm not going to claw it back. But what I want is for you to keep your money, but you get to stay out of politics. From here on out, you're done. Okay. I'm going to take, you know, the government's going to come in. They're going to set, this is how much money you're going to make from here on out. You get to keep what you've earned. And then we're going to rebuild the country and you're going to stay out of politics and you're going to let me do my job.
Right.
And anybody who crosses me is going to jail. Khodorkovsky, backed by City of London,
and that's what happened.
The rest of them, he crossed Putin. He tested the waters. Yeah, it was not just him, but he was the most famous. They nationalized Yukos. They threw his ass in jail.
Yeah, or they knocked him off. Yeah,
right. And, you know, so there's that. And I think that Trump has been trying to use the Epstein files. Now, again, this is my conjecture. You can salt it to taste.
I would agree with that.
Okay. And, you know, I know the Juicebergs in the audience will all be going, no, he's trying to cover for the Israelis. Well, then why did all this stuff come out?
Right.
That they still would have never let any of this out. Because at the end of the day, like Epstein and all of it looks terrible. I'm going to flip my camera again. That's what they did. So I think Trump finally said, okay, we'll let it all out. Because what happened was he said, these are the terms of your surrender. He went to Davos, issued them. He went to the king last fall, king of England last fall. He went to this one. He went to that one, went to everybody. And they all said, hey, what? You know what? No. I'm like, okay. You saying no? You want to fight it out to the end? How many times have I described all this as a big game of Go? Right? And in Go, to explain one more time for those of you who don't know the metaphor, Go is a game of area control and soft power for the first third of the game. Then eventually it becomes a knife fight if you play it all the way out to the end. Now let's just talk about a nice big 19 by 19 Go board, which is what would model geopolitics quite nicely. Not the little 9 by 9 board, which has to be a knife fight because there's not enough room on the board to not be a knife fight. But a 19 by 19 Go board is placing, you know, 10, 15 stones each around the board and then looking at each other going, well, I've kind of got that area. You got to get that area, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to win by 7. Let's pull them up off the table. Let's play again. That's what the master or the person in charge of the game offers to the student. They're trying to explain to the student, I've got you by the balls. This game is over. And if we fight, and I'm offering you a face-saving loss of 7 to 10 stones. But if we fight it out all the way to the end, I know in the back of my mind, I'm going to win by 40.
Right.
Because this kid doesn't have enough skill to play this game, to play this all the way out. I'm actually giving him a way to save face. This is a very important metaphor for the Epstein files. Okay. And what I think Trump was doing was like, look, if you make me fight this way out all the way to the end, you think you're going to win this battle over here and that's going to give you this territory and that's going to fight over here. So you think you're still in charge of the situation, but you're really not, because I'm willing to put, and with the power that I have as the U.S. president, with the dollar, with our trade, with our economy, with our military, with our rule of law, with this, with that. I know you think you have all of these assets and these agents on the ground that are going to start a civil war in the United States. Or they're going to do this. Or you're going to do that. Or you're going to dump our treasury bonds. Or you're going to blow up these. You're going to blow up these banks or whatever you think you're going to do. I'm telling you, I've already seen all those possible outcomes. And I know that doesn't mean I'm not going to get my hair mussed. Doesn't mean you're not going to take some, you're going to win some battles off of me. You're not going to win some territory, but you're going to lose the freaking war. And you're going to lose the war because the people of the world don't want you to win. Because I have China and Russia in my back pocket. I've got most of sub-Saharan Africa. I've got the Middle East. I've got Central and South America are all turning against you people. Like, you're losing it all.
And nobody talks about that, but go ahead.
But so this is the point, is that since 2015, when Putin first stood up to the United States, first stood up to Obama, God, I hate doing a podcast, getting a tickle in my back of my throat.
Me too.
When Putin first went into Syria in 2015, October of 2015, right after he went to the UN and said, and gave the, what do you people realize what you have done speech. And then 2 days later, he's flying 40, he's got, you know, 12 planes flying 70 freaking sorties a day or whatever the hell it was over Syria and changing the outcome on the ground and blowing open the entire idea that, oh my God, we don't know how to fight ISIS. We can read license plates from fucking space, for Christ's sake, and bomb people from across the goddamn planet, but we can't find a Toyota Hilux with a 50 caliber machine gun on the back of it. Yeah, okay. In the desert. Yeah, okay. play Jingle Bells, right? So what I said then was, And I know I said this. I didn't say it. I said it in my newsletter that I had when I was writing for Newsmax at the time, and I had to talk my editor off the ledge when I wrote all this and said, this is what's going to happen. She's like, are you sure? She was British, a lovely British woman. I'm like, yes. Are you sure you want to go with this? Yes, I do. Okay. Which is that what Putin is doing here, if he's successful, he's going to show the entire world that they can stand up to the United States and not get punched in the mouth.
Yeah.
And what is that going to do? Everybody else is going to stand up. They're going to stand up a little straighter. Mm-hmm. They're going to go, oh, that's different. Mm-hmm. Uh-oh. Maybe we have a chance to get off underneath this. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, when they're winning, your best strategy is survival.
Right.
You survive until the next day. Like, you retreat, you do what you have to do, you cut the deals you have to do, you make nice, you smile to the king's face while you're plotting against him, or you're waiting for that opportunity for somebody else to, you know, pull the second lieutenant, pop his head up out of the foxhole and charge across the freaking no man's land and try and take their machine gun nest, right? I don't want to do that, but hey, if that guy wants to do it, hey, okay. We need to give that job to the fucking Greeks or the Australians or whoever. Okay, let's go do it. Wow, I'm not going to do it. Says the Saudis, says the Qataris, says this one, says Burkina Faso or whomever it is. I'm not going to do it, but if, you know, Putin wants to do it.
Right.
The minute he did it. The minute he did it, it changed. It started to change everything. And now we're kind of downstream of all of this. So that's when you can have Trump then turn around and start issuing orders of, you know, terms of surrender. And that's a very powerful thing. And that's what we've been seeing over the last couple of weeks. And so that's the way I'm framing the Epstein files. Now, again, I may be wrong about that. And I want to caution everybody when I say this kind of analysis is purely intuitional, right? It's a pure, like, you know, but it fits what we're seeing.
I think it's more than that, but go ahead.
What's that?
I think it's a little more than that. It is intuition, but
I'm not being falsely modest here. What I'm doing is I'm giving everybody a framework, right? Yeah. To then start look at some of the other things, because, you know, as you and I were talking before we hit record, I said, why do I think this, right? Because now everybody's going, Tom, what about the Jews? What about the, fine. The thing that in the first day of the Epstein file release, you know how I tell you all the time, I get like 20 friggin' Twitter DMs all day long of shit. And I have my people on the Slack server, and I've got people pinging me on Twitter, just open air on Twitter all day long. I get 150, pieces of data a day without me having to do anything, right? And, but they know, but the ones who are like, they know, because they listen to the, okay, let's talk about this thing that popped out of my ass a month ago, right? That was just, again, one of these intuitional things. And I say, okay, well, I think this is where we are. And it was, what's the most important thing that popped out of all of this stuff with Epstein for me? It was the emails between Steve Bannon and Ehud Barak saying that they had to get rid of Jeffrey Epstein and Steve Bannon, and they're saying they needed to get rid of Jerome Powell in 2018.
Yes.
Now, why would they want to get rid of Jerome Powell in 2018? Powell had only raised interest rates 75 basis points. Oh, but he started SOFR.
Yeah.
And so when I came to the conclusion about a month and a half or 2 months ago, I've been sitting here with Steve Bannon back and forth going, I don't understand what I get the guy and I don't get the guy. I've always said, you know, once Navy intelligence, always Navy intelligence, that kind of thing. But I never really had a full-fledged understanding operational model of who he actually works for. And I'm going to tell you who I think he works for. And it was actually interesting. It started when Robert Barnes started to crash out and started to come out and went, and Barnes, who had ghosted me for 3 years, I couldn't get arrested by Robert Barnes. I couldn't get process served by Robert Barnes and, you know, to like do a podcast or anything else. People have been screaming about we should do a podcast for 3 years, and he wouldn't talk to me. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, he starts coming after me on Twitter.
Interesting.
About 3 months ago, middle of November, or maybe early November. I have to go back and check the dates. Doesn't matter. And I went, huh. And I'm like, Barnes, Bannon, this one, that one. Now I'm going to run something else by you.
Yes.
So what are they doing? Barnes, City of London? What the fuck? Because I got to the point where I'm like, Bannon, when I heard that, and like it came out that Bannon had been trying to get Trump into a room with Epstein in 2018, and that was about the same time as Bannon then immediately left the Trump administration. He went from secret agent man to persona non grata faster than you can say Angelina Jolie has nice hits. Like, this is the kind of thing, like, right? So, like, what do you do here, right? How do you square all that? And then Epstein winds up in jail and blah, 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 and then he's dead and okay, whatever. But it becomes a very simple thing. I'm gonna throw a framework at you that literally had just come to right before we hit record and you and I were just chatting, which is the following. You know, at this point now, if they're working for some, why they're trying to split the MAGA coalition, think about the Steve Bannon wing of the Republican Party or of the MAGA commentariat. The real enemy isn't Russia, it's China.
China.
The real enemy isn't this guy, it's China. We need to do all of this to attack China. China. Meanwhile, London is running with we need to stop the Russians.
Russia.
The Russians, the Iranians. So the Israeli wing is working the Iranian angle. The British and the French wing are running, the oligarchy are running the anti-Russia scandal. And the quote-unquote MAGA-tards are pivoting, going, hey, by the way, the Russia story is failing. For anybody who disbelieves the Russia story, you have to give them something to pivot to. So what do? You give them China. And that's the Steve Bannon wing. They're all refractions of quote-unquote Davos / the high table / City of London. Okay. When you look at it from that perspective,
it makes
wow,
sense.
Does the social media landscape not look like, did it not just go from opaque to crystal fucking clear? Mm-hmm. And now you can map everybody's friggin', you can map who's taking what checks from whom?
Yeah. Yep.
And again, it's not that, you know, and it's not that there aren't other through lines here, right? So, but that's the big one. I think that really helps. It's like, at the end of the day, the goal is always to get rid of Trump, because Trump is the guy who will re-implement the American system and will, as he's been putting it in no uncertain terms, and who started doing it before him? Me. The American Revolution was not ever finished.
Yeah.
I've been saying this for 5 freaking years. The American Revolution has not been finished.
Right.
So, you know, again, I'm not trying to bust my hand, pat myself on the back or anything, just saying, you know, the themes or the events have caught up to the things that I started seeing ages ago. Again, when I started looking at this going, no, the goal is always to get the United States into a two-front war that it can't fight so they can bankrupt itself. And then who winds up, you know, smelling like a rose? Well, City of London. Again, if I'm in a four-player game for control of the world, right, I just like fall right back on my old, you know, hey, let's play Dune, and I'm got to figure out how I can get the Harkonnens and the Bene Gesserit and the Guild to kill each other. Sorry, I'm usually the Guild and trying to get all the other powers, and the Guild is like sitting there behind the scenes going, all right, now I go for the win. But you should all fight, like, right now. You should actually all fight. And hey, why don't you all fight? Why don't you come out from the shadows and you do this and you do that? And that's exactly how you play that kind of, you know, that kind of war game out. And if you're London and you think like that, well, that's what you do. And to say that, you know, that's all 5D chess or that's all this, that's all your inability. I'm sorry. That's just a coping mechanism because you're just too fucking stupid or willfully obtuse to actually look at the world as that stands in front of you. And I'm sorry if that offends people, but that's just the truth. You're just being willfully obtuse because you don't actually, Andy, I know you get this, which is to say, look, man, like, this is the way geopolitics is written. And if you want it to all be just as simple as like Occam's razors, and you just need a simple through line that somebody fed you through some friggin' slop from the Financial Times, and you just want to believe that, go right ahead and live in your little normie world that everything is direct cause and effect.
Right.
Got news for you. You're the easiest person in the world to manipulate. Or everything really is, in these people's minds, a goddamn, like, John Le Carre model. And that's just the way they operate. Because their game is to extend the empire for as long as possible. And how do you extend the empire? You extend the empire by controlling the flow of money, yes, by controlling the flow of capital.
Yes.
You control the legitimate rails that money flows over. Now look at all the things that they're against. And they all are things that are direct antipodes, direct competitors to their control over the flow of capital.
Yeah.
And that comes in a variety of different forms. You have to build an institutional penumbra of trust to get capital to move around the world. But when you do that, and if you have all the trust, if you own all the middlemen, all the mechanisms, the clearing, the insurance, the reinsurance, the shipping insurance, this, all of that stuff, when you own that and you coordinate the movement of physical goods through the futures exchanges and through price and time and blah, and all of this stuff, and all the currency exchanges happen in your banks, and you build up all these beautiful, these long-term relationships with everybody, do you actually need to control or own any of the physical property? No, you don't. You virtualize the empire. Now, what's the CBDC? So you virtualized the hard money standard.
I was going to go there.
To a paper money standard, the dollar.
Yeah, I was going
to
go there. Go ahead.
What's next? CBDCs. CBDC is the further virtualization. Why are they so interested in AI? To build a panopticon, to be able to control, to be able to see where all your money goes so that they can control your access to that money and your access to the society. Now, you know, they don't need to have control over all of it. They just need to have control over the on-ramps and the off-ramps.
Yeah.
They just need to have control over the trust systems. And, you know, that's why do you think they're so, why do you think they're bombing the fuck out of Bitcoin right now?
Yeah.
Because Bitcoin at a fundamental level, and again, this gets down to this whole idea that they can make you think they control the code to make you think that they've destroyed the network.
Yeah.
Now, let's take it one step further. So, tie it all back up to Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, release the Epstein files on Friday. In there, sloppily throw some stuff in there about Donald Trump and blah, blah, blah. That's all fucking slop. I think, I'll bet you dollars to dog shit that half of the Bitcoin stuff is slop, but I'm not gonna say one way or the other what I do and what I don't believe. I could be wrong. I could be right. But they want you to believe that Bitcoin's immensely compromised. Right at the moment when the United States is trying to get digital asset legislation, regulations in place so that we can get control of the flow of dollars, right, that are outside the control system of the Federal Reserve and everything else, move the payment rails onto something different, into a different system controlled by the Treasury. Mm-hmm. So what do? They give us Moltbook. Oh, no, look, Skynet is happening literally in real time. Like, by Friday, they're going to be nuking us, right? Go back to go back to literally T2. Like, Sarah Connor telling you what the timeline was. On this date, this happened. And by Friday, they had control of the nukes, and they decided they didn't need people anymore. And then we had Judgment Day. And it only took Skynet 96 hours to figure this out. Well, they were trying the same thing on Monday with Moltbook. They were trying, you know, they destroyed Bitcoin. They destroyed, you know, they're trying to destroy all of our faith and all of the institutions and everything about, you know, the world that we think we live in is even worse than we in our most fevered imagination, right? And Bitcoin and this and that. What's next? Locusts?
Right.
Right?
Right.
Now they're telling us that there's a plague coming out of Africa. There's, you know, global warming. My tux didn't come back from the cleaners. There was traffic on I-95. Locusts.
Yeah, you're on mute.
John Belushi at the end of the Blues Brothers.
Why yeah, I got it. I got it. I got it. I got the TT reference.
Didn't get any money from cab fare. The touch was like going back to the cleaners.
Well, know, where I was like, going this,
I was watching that the other day. I was watching the Blues Brothers like 3 or 4 months ago, and of course, you know, twist my arm to watch Carrie Fisher in her prime, right? And I'm like watching that, going, "Oh my god, that's so fucking Davos right there." I literally was watching the Blues Brothers, going, "There it is. There's Davos,
right?"
And well, then, you know, and then all I have to do is then when she melts, if I were to like do the meme thing, I like have Davos trying to get out from underneath the responsibility of having destroyed the world. And then when she melts and like lets them, you know, and she melt, I would like probably have the like little floating thing above her head, you know, Magatards.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean? Or, you know, the multiple cry, or the blue sky crowd. Oh, okay. All yeah. Freaking. You know, locusts. Like, oh my
God. I got it. It's interesting too, though, when you say that's how they lost control of the metals market. Really, the commodities markets. No.
So now you understand why we're attacking the commodities market. Why you think we're doing it? We're trying to take away. We're trying to take away the control over the flow of metals. We don't give a fuck about the stock of the metal. No one cares about stock. It's all about flow. And I remember being convinced of that by Zero Hedge, like 15. Probably 15 years, no, it's 2026, so probably about 13 to 14 years ago, you know, getting off the stock side of the quantity theory of money that Austro-libertarians are so obsessed with. All the money supplies everything, that means inflation, blah, blah, blah. You know, and again, even Mises had to remind us that the quantity theory of money talks, is its biggest flaw is that it doesn't talk about the demand side for money. Everybody talks about the supply of money, but never with the demand. Martin Armstrong has to remind us about this.
Martin Armstrong, yep.
Marty, you know, talks about that all the time. I remember reading Marty and like screaming at him from my laboratory when I used to be a fucking retard. And then one day I like woke up and I'm like, no, fuck, Marty's right. Yeah. And that was like 10, that was like 12 years ago for me. You know, somewhere between, I think there were 2013 and 2014, I finally like, oh yeah, no, right. I get it now. The dollar's not going to go into the dodo, not going to go the way of the dodo. It's the euro. That's the freaking problem. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. They're trying desperately to try and figure out a way to destroy the dollar and destroy everybody else's confidence and everything else so that they can rug pull everybody into a newly designed euro after they crash the entire global economy, which is what they're trying to do right now.
Yeah.
Not going to work because Scott Bessent and Donald Trump are looking at him going, that's nice.
Yeah.
Jerome Powell's like, no, I'm going to stay on the board at the FOMC so I can be a hawk just along with the rest of them. Powell's going to go back. If Powell goes back to the FOMC, it's not because he's going to be there to be a stick in the mud against Trump. He's going to be there to be a fourth vote next to a Mirren and, you know, the other guy on the board in order to make sure that Warsh gets done what he wants to get done.
Because I wanted to work that out.
Powell's role when he was a junior member, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, I wanted to work that out. That Powell's gone, then what?
Then Kevin Warsh looks like, right?
Same old. So, I mean,
and that's great because Warsh is like, and this is the other thing. Like the interesting thing about Warsh, and I can already like hear the people screaming in the audience. Ah, Warsh is another goddamn Bilderberger. Yeah, so was Scott Bessent.
Right. Who's the man?
If you're gonna break, excuse me. If so was Donald Trump. Remember, Donald Trump was part of their cabal.
Yeah.
So was Scott Bessent.
Mm-hmm.
So was Howard Lodnick.
Mm-hmm.
So is Jamie Dimon. Mm-hmm. Like, at the end of the day, these are the men that are going to look behind the curtain, see the situation for what it is, see the opportunity to change the system, and go, we're the only ones who have the power and the relationship and the skills to actually do this. Like, no one, I used to say in Libertarian Party meetings all the time, right? Like, we get a bunch of Libertarians together, especially 25 years ago, and they would say, goddamn, you'll never be able to convince the government. The government employees to vote against their own best interests and blah, blah, blah. Really? Like, I know y'all are small business owners and stuff, but, you know, have you ever worked for government? Because I work for government right now.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you right now that, like, and y'all want to make me, like, freaking state chair. Like, and I work for the University of Florida. I can tell you, no one sees corruption like a government employee. No one sees waste and fraud like a government employee. No one wants to go to work every day and just collect a freaking paycheck with no purpose.
Right.
Like, everybody thinks they want that job until they get that job.
And then the minute they
get that job, they're like, oh, Christ, this sucks. It's draining my vitality. It's draining my purpose in life. I'm I waste my time here every day. What am I going to do? Like, no one wants to do that. Really, what people want is purpose and drive. And nothing's worse than working really hard for a purposeless job. Like you're moving purposeless paper around, or you're not doing anything that makes anybody else's day better, but you're still working hard.
Right.
Or you're working really hard to make some fucking fat asshole rich who's going to, enslave a whole bunch of people. And that's what they wind up doing. Right. You're in service of an evil system in your work, and you're being forced to work hard. And that's the anti-purpose. Right.
Right.
The second worst thing to do is to have a job where you get paid whether you show up or not.
Right.
As long as you show up every day, you get paid, even if you don't do anything. Where you're trying to get stuff. And if you're one of the few people actually trying to get stuff done, you're actually the bad guy.
Right.
And then you finally get to, hey, I'd rather, have a job that has purpose. So no, there's plenty of people out there. And Scott Bessent, like the best way to attack those guys is to poach one of their guys.
Yeah. And that's what happened.
Or two or three or four. Or six, or 12, or 50. And that's what you got to ask yourself. It's not even the guys at the top of these organizations as matter as much as who do they bring with them?
Yeah, 1,000%.
What's their ethos?
Yeah.
If Bessent is coming in and saying, we're going to do this, this, and this via the Treasury, he's got to have 100 freaking people within, at least 20 department heads that have to then go and do the freaking work.
Yeah.
And implement it and kick out all the friggin' non-hackers and all the work that needs to be done there. And in places like the DOJ and the various intelligence agencies and everything else, the first year alone is just identifying who the shitbags are that are lying in wait, waiting to be activated, smile to your face and stab you in the back the next day. Like we just found another one of those out in the FBI because they were leaking everything that was going on in Fulton County.
Yeah.
Yep. Right. And how many times have I described people like Mitt Romney or Marjorie Taylor Drama Queen or any of these other people about that they're fake MAGA or they're fake Republicans, that their job is to lie in wait, vote, make no waves, vote the way you need to, just make a whole bunch of vote with the administration 91% of the time, as Thomas Massey likes to tell everybody. But then the 9% of the time that he doesn't is the 9% of the time that matters, because the other 91% of the votes gives a shit. Like these bills are going to pass with or without you, or they're going to fail with or without you. So it's an inconsequential vote. But when that one vote comes up that they need you to do X, Y, and Z, you're going to do that. Yeah. And that's when you find out who that person actually works for. And if you don't understand that model of human behavior, then you should stop being a public commentator on human behavior. Like tomorrow. And that is, again, Andy, go back to what I said this time last year. I started seeing this in the zeitgeist. I started seeing it within the commentary out. I'm like, in about 6 months, a whole bunch of people are going to crash out, and they're going to reveal themselves that have been either wrong about everything, or we're going to find out who they really are. Because everybody, when they're put under this kind of existential threat, with the way Trump is changing the narrative, they're going to revert to type every fucking time.
Yeah.
In my mind, and I even copped to this. I said, yeah, I reverted to type two. I became an American patriot because that's what I've always been.
Yeah.
The reason I was so friggin' anti-American for all those years was because my country had turned into a carbon copy of the shitbag British Empire.
Right.
Like that's what I wanted. I didn't know what it was. I couldn't put a name to it for years and years and years. But now I can put a name to it. And go, that's what it was. I don't want to be that anymore. I want to be these guys. I want to be the eagle screaming, no, because fuck you, that's why.
Yeah.
We're Americans. Why are you doing that? Because fuck you, that's why. Because we can't. Because we're America, and we have a right and a privilege and a duty to lead the world against these terrible people.
Yeah.
We have a duty as Americans to do this, because we're the first ones to do it successfully, enshrine and ordain a constitution that put the people sovereign over the freaking government, and start the process of having sovereign men say no to colonial empire.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how long that fight takes. In our case, it took 250 years. Well, this was a 2,000-year-old empire. So, seems reasonable. It takes 250 years, a quarter of a millennia to fight them.
Yeah.
dismantle them. And maybe that's what we're gonna see in the next 10 or 15 years. And if we don't, and if we lose, well, then it's no worse than we knew where we thought we were going to be 10 years ago.
Yeah.
All you got to do is revert your brain back to 2015, hunker down and, you know, and wait for the sun to burp and hope that, you know, that the absolves us of the responsibility of having to live under the thumb of these retards when, you know, civilization collapses and we move on. Like, you know what I mean?
So
we hope the sun burps and like help and helps us out because we're too much because we can't help ourselves and then we have to get, you know, bailed out by God or whatever. Yeah. So
work out a little bit for me. We talked about money flow here, and that's just such a theme of yours here. Right. So are we seeing money flow? Are we starting to see this money flow back to the US? And I would say yes. And I steal that to all my friends listening in Atlanta. I've stolen this from you. Because everybody's like, oh, dollar down, America's going to crap. And I just say, no, money's flow is going to come back to the U.S. And I have you to thank for that.
And money flow is coming back to the U.S.
What's that?
Money flow is coming back. Money flow is coming back to the U.S. I haven't done the cross-market analysis today. Today's Thursday, right? Because I only really check the cross-market analysis on, you know, Sundays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays when I do the work for the patrons and or Newsmax. I do a similar thing for my subscribers over Newsmax. I do for the Gold Goats and Guns guys on Tuesdays. Right. So I'm doing that. I'm doing that, all that cross market analysis then. And, you know, on days like today, when I'm watching, well, the DAX is down, you know, along with the Dow, along with the S&P 500, everything's down today. You know, gold's getting shellacked. Silver's getting shellacked. Bitcoin's getting shellacked. Okay. So someone's raising currency. Euro's down too, by the way. So, and what's the US dollar doing today? So the dollar index is up, everything else is getting shellacked. Right. So at this point, at this moment in time, right now, that makes some sense. There's clearly some level of stress in the market, right? Epstein is throwing things into the loony bin, blah, blah, blah. There's something out there. I'm not sure what it is, right? But it's something, and it's clearly showing up in the cross market analysis. So it's clearly showing up in the capital flows, and people are moving into the dollar. Makes sense.
Safety. Yeah, makes sense.
You know?
Yeah.
The US 10 years down 9 basis points today. Okay. 9 basis points.
Yeah, that's a move.
Yeah. And the German 10 years only down 5 basis points.
That's a move.
Right. Yeah. So now the German U.S. German 10-year spread is 17 and 19, 137. Yesterday, it closed at 141.
Interesting.
130. Yeah. So tightened by 4 basis points today. Why? Because when money needs to go to ground, money goes to the dollar, money goes to U.S. treasuries, and doesn't necessarily go to the German bund as quickly. And that's, you know, that's exactly what we should expect to see. Hell, I mean, you know, and so just kind of doing a quick analysis of it, you know, yeah. What are you gonna say? Like, and that's okay. Like,
yeah,
that's okay if we're gonna have that, and we're gonna have a return to, you know, again, I haven't been arguing for like huge moves in the equity markets. I think it's possible, and you know, I'll get the Dow on a weekly basis. I'll get the chart, and you're like, really? It looks like it wants to blow through 50 and go to 60, but is it? Going to do that was yesterday. Today it's down 600 points, and you know, who knows what it's going to want to do tomorrow and coming into the end of the week. And you know, we're starting to see volatility rise. We're starting to see volatility across all asset classes, meaning something's going to break. JP Morgan comes out today and says, analysts note that says, you know, by the end of the year, we're looking at $10,000 gold. Like, gold is going to double by the end of the year.
Right.
Like, when the hell did JP Morgan, anybody at JP Morgan, are you kidding me? A junior or even senior analyst at JP Morgan would write that friggin' note at any point in the past, they'd have gotten fired on the spot.
Right.
So, you know, it's a different world than we've been living in. So somebody knows something about something. But what I can tell everybody is the following, having done this recently, and I think everybody should do this. Looking just at U.S. markets doesn't give you an understanding of what's actually happening. What I noted, and I did this for yesterday. I said, okay, let's look at the last four. Let's look at the weekly chart on the DAX, the Euro Stoxx 50, and the Dow. Now, the Euro Stoxx 50 is technically the Dow of Europe, right? Dow's, you know, 4 weeks ago, the Dow makes a move towards 50 grand. Technically, it's a breakout of consolidation pattern. you know, to a new all-time weekly closing high price, and then it does nothing for the next 3 weeks, all mm-hmm. through the month of January. So the first week of January breaks out, and then for the rest of January, it just trades within that opening range for the month. Right, first mm-hmm. week, consider the first week, the opening range for the month. Next 3 weeks, it just dithers around. Doesn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, the Euro Stoxx 50 and the DAX broke out and then collapsed.
Interesting.
Meaning they threw what you would consider, what I consider a reversal signal, where they had an uptrend that ran through the first week of January.
Mm-hmm.
And then they closed against the previous low of the trend, giving you the reversal signal to the downside. And they haven't been able to regain that high since then. The high of that week, which was reversal. Right, so from a technical perspective, I see the same thing in both the German market and the Euro Stoxx 50.
That's really bad.
Even though, if you just look at the raw numbers, like relative performance or whatever you want to call it, and you track relative performance on a monthly, quarterly basis of all these things at the same time, those numbers won't give you the reality of this. Why? I mean, the older I get, the more I do this, the more I'm like, you got to know how to read candles. You can see the weakening of the internals, you can see the weakening of the momentum, sentiment, and everything within those bar patterns, within those candles patterns. More, and then you can look at them. So even if, you know, at the end of the day, well, the Dow was only up 1% and the DAX was up 1%. Yeah, but or it was only up 0.5%. Well, that's interesting. Fine. That's mm-hmm. that's good. But if they're both in technical uptrends and one mm-hmm. is just slightly outperforming the other, I don't know if that says very much, other than the fact that it takes a fuckload more money to move the Dow than it does the DAX.
Right. I think it says a lot. If the DAX, I mean, if the markets in Europe are breaking down, mm-hmm. it goes back to money flow back to the US, right?
So, you know, the Dow might only be up a couple of percent. I mean, as of yesterday, I think the Dow was up. I mean, I'm not counting today because I have to go recalculate, but you know, I did all this yesterday for the market report. So as of this year, the Dow was up like 3.5% or almost 3.7%, something like that, outperforming the DAX, outperforming the NASDAQ, outperforming the Euro Stoxx 50, not outperforming the Nikkei because mm-hmm. we're having rotation out of Japanese government bonds because they're raising interest rates. Yep. That makes sense.
Yep.
Emerging markets as managed by EEM, the big BlackRock ETF, with billions of dollars under AUM, is a perfectly good, you know, proxy for emerging market, you know, money flow, I think. If you've got a better one, I'm open to suggestions. But EEM is killing it. Why? Because Donald Trump's tariffs didn't cause a global recession.
Right.
We're watching a manufacturing boom. And then the other one that's outperforming, you know, the Dow, the S&P and the NASDAQ, which makes perfect sense, is the Russell 2K. And the U.S. small caps, which is, I called this 7 months ago. I said, if Trump is right, 8 months ago, I said, if Trump is right and his tariffs are working and everything else, I said, at some point, we're going to start to see the Russell. I wanted to go along the Russell, like when Trump got in office. I waited.
I didn't think about it. I should have. Go ahead.
I went along the Russell in Q3. After Q3, I said, now's the time. When the Russell outperformed the Dow for Q3, even though the Dow was starting to outperform everything else coming into the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of the rally last year in the European stocks was in the first half of the year. And then it's kind of treaded water for the rest of the year while the Dow caught up a little bit, but never quite closed the gap. Everything was up. All equities mm-hmm. were up across the board because bond yields were up across the board. Like mm-hmm. government bond yields were up, you know, other than like the U.S. was flat because we went up 50 basis points and we went down 50 basis points on the year. The 10-year really didn't move, but the DAX moved up 30 basis points. The German Bunds moved up 30 basis points. Lagarde was now having to defend 285 as opposed to 255 on the German 10-year. Same thing. You know, the only one that was up was the Italian yield. Everybody else was getting killed. But what you and I talked about last time. But I went along the Russell the minute we saw the outperformance begin to happen, which meant that the market was beginning to believe that Trump was winning the political yep. battle and the capital flow battle. And if that were the case and his economic system was going to be implemented,
Mm-hmm.
Then you go along U.S. small caps because they're the ones that are going to get the lion's share of the capital flow, and we should be off to the races. And since then, the Russell has vastly outperformed the Dow and the S&P. It's doing well. It's not doing great, but it's doing well.
Relatively,
Nikkei is still killing everybody.
Right.
You know, and I've been long the Nikkei in one of my newsletters for fucking 2 years now.
I expected that.
I had it in both positions at one point, and I exited it I exited the one a while ago, and I kept it in the other one.
Yeah.
And the way to play the Nikkei, by the way, is to play the DXJ, the currency hedged version of this, so that you're not, and you're going to get whipsawed on big moves in the yen up or down. It's going to underperform during big moves of the yen up or down. When it changes, right? When you flip from the yen's weakening to the yen strengthening, if that happens mid month, the thing may get whipsawed. But for the most part, it should always outperform the Nikkei. Because it's currency hedged.
Yep, right? It's currency. Yep.
And it also pays a slightly better yield than if you want to buy it's NKY, I think is the Nikkei, whatever the Nikkei straight Nikkei ETF is. I like the DXJ better.
Got it.
For the currency. So you don't have to worry about the currencies, the arbitrage.
Got it. Pivot a little bit. Talk just briefly about. I just thought of this. I talked to our friend Alex Craner. That was a great podcast. This was about a week ago. Yeah, I love Alex. Great guy and just a great thinker. Mm-hmm. He really worked out, and we talked about this when I had you on last,
mm-hmm.
Maduro.
Mm-hmm.
And everything was just too perfect, meaning him over here. And he said the only thing that can make, I'll paraphrase, Alex, please forgive me if I get this wrong, but I paraphrase. The only thing that you can think of is that Trump went in to really just, I don't want to say save Maduro, but he was welcomed in.
I like exfiltrated personally, right?
Exfiltrated. He was
brought into protective custody.
Yes. Yes.
That's the way I read it from the moment we took him. I'm like, oh, look, that's a guy that's been brought into protective custody.
So that's your opinion. And then, and to work that out with me in Venezuela, then being a beachhead, not being a beachhead for the other system.
Oh God, there's so much to talk about with Venezuela. Let's not, you know, I think I did a podcast with, I think it was Blaine Holt. We went over this and I created a meme of, you know, a post-it note and stuck into the globe into Venezuela. And what does Venezuela mean? It's like all of these things and not all of the above. It's like six things and all of the above. Grok actually got that one right. It was, oh my God, it was so hard to get a halfway decent image out of Grok sometimes. I don't even know how people do it. But Venezuela is everything for the Western Hemisphere because it was clearly the clearinghouse for the Axis of Resistance money, the cartel money, the child trafficking, the drugs, everything. No, there's no drugs and no fentanyl comes out of Venezuela. Shut the fuck up. Like the stuff flows through. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like there are container ships out there that, you know, nominally have oil on them that are also running guns. Mm-hmm. You know, there's dry weight tonnage out there. You know, they nominally have, you know, they have a whole bunch of Chinese crap that we, you know, sell on Amazon. And then, you know, six or eight of them have guns in them, by the way. Mm-hmm. FYI. It's like, you know, there's some guns in there too. There's some weapons. There's some underage Chinese girls in there too. You know, just FYI.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you don't think that that's the case, like, I'm sorry. Like, go watch season two of The Wire again.
right?
So, yeah, seriously, go watch season two of The Wire, which is the season where they go into the ports, right?
Yeah, right.
And that's all, you know, so there's all that. There's the voter fraud.
Yeah.
That was moving through Venezuela.
Mm-hmm. I got a lot of comments from the viewers about that. What about the voter fraud? There you go.
Yeah. What about the voter fraud? Why do you think Tulsi Gabbard was in Fulton County?
Fulton County, Georgia. Yeah.
Right. come on, like this is not hard. It's mm-hmm. all of those things and more. And mm-hmm. then there's the oil. And anybody who wants to reduce Venezuela to one single thing, oh, it's all in this with the oil, it's all about this, it's all about the bullshit. Like, why did the Chinese say, you know, sign off on Venezuela?
Mm-hmm.
Because it was either that or they get none of the oil in Venezuela.
Yes.
Coming out of Venezuela.
Okay. Yes.
They want the heavy sour crude. They're building out a blue water navy. Now, Steve Bannon will look at that and say, oh, they're building a blue water navy so that they can take Taiwan and then they can attack the United States. And yeah, if we allow them to do all that and act like a bunch of fucking mouth-breathing retards, then yes, Steve Bannon, you are absolutely correct. That's what's going to happen. And if we act like people with, you know, room temperature or higher IQ, then that is not going to happen. And what's going to happen is that in the long run, Pax Americana, which is what the U.S. Navy is, another way of saying the U.S. Navy patrols the sea lanes to minimize piracy, is no longer going to be done by just the U.S. Navy. It's going to be Pax, what I like to call Pax Arca, where the Americans, the Russians, and the Chinese, and to very little extent the Russians, obviously, because the Russian Navy is almost an oxymoron. It's almost like the British Navy at this point. It's almost an oxymoron. You City of London. You Keir Starmer. So really it's Pax ACA, right? Or ACA. And not, you know, so the Americans and the Chinese are going to build a blue water navy to protect their shipping lane interests around the world. As we break the world up into, you know, spheres of influence, then mm-hmm. their navy should have access, should have just enough fuel to run their ships around the world and no more.
Got it.
That's why we're pushing on Iran. That's why we want a nuclear deal with Iran. We want, not only do we want to get rid of the, we want to give the mullahs an escape path, a way out of this. Let's get rid of the vestiges of City of London's / France's / the High Table's stupid forever war bullshit about you guys pursuing ballistic nuclear missiles to attack Israel with. Let's end that bullshit. Let's get that over. Let's get rid of that. At the same time, let's get you back into the general economy so that the Chinese have to pay full price for oil again. Because yeah. the Iranians also produce a fair amount of medium heavy sour crude. It's yeah. very important. So do the Russians. But most of the Russians' heavy sour crude is produced in Siberia
mm-hmm.
or points west. And therefore, it's not easy to pipe that shit out of Siberia across pipelines and into China. It's cost prohibitive.
Right.
Maybe you can do it on trucks. Maybe you can do it on a rail car. But there's not a lot of infrastructure between yeah. the Russians and the Chinese across the Amur River out west, that, you know, in that area of the world. And it's been, that was, and you can thank Nixon, the Sino-Soviet split and all of that stuff. It's why do you think the Russians continue to use a unique rail gauge? It's Tell both me. Defensive and offensive.
Mm-hmm.
From their perspective, because they move all of their military assets yep. on rail.
Yep.
It's a
yep.
signal that if they ever modernize their military logistics to really be designed around road and air like ours is, that would be a provocative move by the Russians. The fact of the matter that the Russians Great continue point. to emphasize military logistics over rail and their unique rail gauge that no one else uses means they have a physical limit as to how far they can go
yeah.
on any offensive any offensive campaign. And anybody who's selling you anything beyond that is selling you fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
Is selling you warmongering bullshit for their, and then you have to ask the basic question, why would they want to sell you on that? Maybe it's because they want to go to war with the Russians to steal all their wealth.
Right.
Like they've yeah. been trying to do for 350 years. And where do you think that slop comes from? It doesn't come from the Jews. It comes yeah. from the fucking British who have yeah. been trying to stop them having, they want to have control over the flow of the commodities and the monetization of those commodities.
Yep. Yep.
And they need to monetize those income streams to keep the credit flowing, to keep the financialization model going so that they can stay in power. That's what they want. They don't want that. They don't want those goods not flowing through their networks, mm-hmm. their financial networks, not their physical networks.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
And
yep,
so
yep.
they thought they could get the United States to kick the Russians' ass to then get control of all that, and especially get control of the Donbass, which is why Putin, of course, because look, at the end of the day, Ukraine, from a critical military minerals perspective, is uninteresting west of the Dnieper River.
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing but farmland,
right?
All of the coal and the natural gas and the steel and the iron ore
is in the east.
Else is all in the Donbass.
Yep, yep,
it's all there. There's a reason why the Azovstal steel plant / underground city was in Mariupol,
mm-hmm.
and not outside of Kiev.
Yep,
not hard, folks.
Yep.
Okay. So you know. Work all that out. And at the end of the day, you go back to Venezuela. What you're really talking about here is that the United States is basically negotiating with China and everybody else to say, look, if you want to de-escalate any potential tensions between the United States and China, which is not going to happen as long as Xi Jinping is in power over there and the Hu Jintao faction in the CCP does never takes power again over in China, which would then mean that China is now back in the hands of the City of London, then we're good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a matter of negotiating down, you know, where everybody gets a piece of the pie. And Trump's made it abundantly clear that, you know, if the Chinese behave themselves, we have good relations with the Chinese, then Venezuela, the United States, and China will all get a piece of a much bigger pie of the Venezuelan oil production that comes out over the next decade. And we can start building a better world that everybody needs, because the Chinese are going to need that oil, but the United States wants them paying full price for it.
Yep.
No more than we, you know, we're willing to pay full price for it. We're going to pull it out of the ground. You're China. You don't have enough oil to run your economy. You have to pay full price for it like everybody else. Otherwise, our friends, the Japanese, are at a disadvantage. The Thais are at a disadvantage. The Indonesians are at a disadvantage. Everybody in the region is. And that means that China gets something that is getting something for nothing. And that's not the way this world is going to work going forward.
Right.
Everybody's going to pay their way. And if you want us to pay a market access charge to get into the Chinese consumers, great.
Right.
We'll negotiate the market access charge, otherwise known as the tariff, cross border. We'll do the thing, but everybody will be cool.
Yeah,
and we can have a world where we have tensions over these things. But if you get rid of the people who are constantly trying to steal everybody else's shit. Steal everybody else's shit and then call it moral,
right?
And we got why do you think they imported the Somalis in Minnesota,
right? Yeah,
because they have the same they have the same fucking morality that the British do.
Right. Well, quick.
Did I say that out loud?
No, that was awesome. No, real quick, we'll land the plane on this, and this could be another hour, but we won't go there. But I do want your opinions on what you have so many followers and listeners in Western Canada.
I do.
What's going to happen there?
We're going to get Alberta. We're going to liberate. We're going to liberate the Canadians. I can't see the order of operations, folks. I'm not going to sit here. It's first, this is going to happen, and then that, and then this.
Right.
What I'm going to tell you is that the Western Canadians want it. We want it. It's in everybody's best interest. And Mark Carney is being isolated. As much as the British and the Europeans want to play this game of writing headlines and paying MAGA influencers to say the United States is being isolated, and to watch all the friggin' pillow biting, bedwetting libertarians to say that, oh my God, the Trump is creamsicle Mussolini and all this horse shit. At the end of the day, the guy who is getting his nuts roasted over an open fire right now is Mark
Carney.
Carney, because the Chinese told him to go fucking scratch. So, by the way, we're going to liberate Canada. Why? Because fuck you. That's why.
All right. Well, let's have another talk here in the next 4 to 6 weeks. And then let's see if the tea leaves see more, her dots are more connected with that, see how it's going to happen. But I share your opinion. I share that same opinion about Western Canada with you.
And for everybody, you know, who gets a little bit upset with my language sometimes, that's because I use these words in sentences. So, but, you know, again, it's a little, this, you know, everybody should have a little patent in them. Like, that's the way I'm, that's the world, that's the mode I'm in right now. And I think everybody, if you, and this is partly me being, you know, facetious, and part of me, you know, I'm like trying to be a little entertaining here, but the truth of the matter is that we have to like, look, it's time, folks, it's time to come back and just be friggin', and, you know, hey, don't be apologetic for having a little testosterone flowing through your veins. Like, that's where we have to be. I'm like, you know, I'm actually feeling pretty good. Let's do this. We can win, and let's win.
Yeah.
And if we're going to win, let's win and go home. Minimum bloodshed, you know, minimum. And hopefully we can get these people to finally just freaking surrender and we can move on. But I don't think that's what's going to happen. It's going to be bloody. It's going to be awful. It's not going to be fun. Okay. It's not going to be fun. So everybody, you know, find a rifle you're good at. That you can handle the recoil of, because you never know. And, you know, you might have to go hunt for your dinner at one point. Like, that's what, I may have to learn how to hunt for my freaking dinner. Like, I don't know. Let's do the thing. Hopefully I can continue to hunt for my dinner at the local Sam's Club or the local butcher. That's right. That's my hope. Right.
Me too. Me too.
And the only thing that I ever have to shoot, the most threatening thing I ever have to shoot in my life is, you know, a piece of paper.
Yeah, right. Me too. Well, Tom, it's always a pleasure, man. Yeah. Absolutely, have you on anytime. I always learn a ton, and it's really helpful to me and hopefully to all my viewers, just working all this out, all of the dots. And you're the best in the business at that, putting the dots together.
Thank you, Andy, but, you know, hopefully I didn't go too far off the rails with some of the dot connecting this week. We'll see what happens, you know.
We'll see what happens.
But again, it's like everything else. You work these things out in real time, not because you want to be right. You want to be right, not because you are right, but because you're trying to find
exactly
the truth. And whatever
exactly
the truth is, and it doesn't matter if you're right this week, you may be right wrong this week and right the next week without
the fuck. Yeah. Search for the truth.
All do our best. Yes. Search for the truth. The search is what matters. So, Andy, as always, man, you have a great week. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk soon.
We'll talk soon, buddy. Thank you, man.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.